the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast. It's a holiday weekend we're coming off of, so we're coming at you a little bit later than normal, which means we kind of missed an 11-game Brewers winning streak. They fly through the week. They end with a loss to Pittsburgh, and now there's just two losses in a row. They lost to New York on Monday night, so we've got to break this down a little bit. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast, and on the other line is Tom Hodricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, longtime Brewers beat reporter who saw team streak in action back in 1987. So he has some reference for what the Brewers almost did. Sunday would have been their 12th consecutive win. It would have triggered free burgers from George Webb. It would have been one game shy of that 13 game streak to start the season in 1987. They do fall short of that. But Tom, I mean, right off the top, and we'll talk about this series coming up with the Reds, which is suddenly very, very important. We'll talk, but how does a team that honestly, I can't explain offensively how this team could score 7.6 runs per game over 11 games. This team is just, I mean, they're just not that great offensively, and I still feel fine saying that. I feel that's defensible, but somehow this team went on an offensive tear with a lot of injuries and a lot of their best players still not, you know, really contributing big time. So what in the world? How do you explain what the Brewers did to win 11 consecutive games?
Well, what it showed us, JR, is that when they do score runs with their pitching, they're dangerous, you know, and we've been waiting for that all year. You know, they still, for the season, their offensive numbers are not great. But for 11 games in a row, it was really good. And I think they outscored, they almost outscored the opposition by like 60 runs over that time. So, you know, there were a couple of thumpings of the Cubs, and the Cubs are taking some thumpings. I think the Cubs' busiest pitcher over the last week has been Eric Sogard.
You're right, yes.
And that's never good. In the three-game series against the Cubs at American Family Field, Eric Sogard pitched twice and Craig Kimbrell did not take off his jacket. So that's how you sweep the Cubs. So there were a couple of lopsided games there, which, you know, really helped the Brewers run differential. You know, after being minus run differential, not by a lot, but by some all year long, they really pushed it up above with that 11-game series. And you know, just had a lot of guys get hot, a lot of different guys get hot. But, you know, they are prone to some offensive skidding at time. We've seen it before. On Sunday, you know, they're in this stretch of playing 33 games in 34 days going into the break. So these guys are probably a little tired. So some guys were given the day off Sunday in Pittsburgh, and then the Brewers lose 2-0. You know, a really good game by Freddie Peralta. Not taken advantage of. And then Monday night, you know, Brandon Woodruff was as good as he can be for six innings, but it was a 1-1 game. And then they finally cracked him with three runs in the seventh. So in the two losses since the winning streak, their starting pitching has been just like it's been all year, fantastic. But their offense, you know, Keston Hira is starting to do some swing and miss again. I'm sure they're very nervous about him. Yelich still trying to get going. You know, Colton Wong going back on the IL, even though Jace Peterson has been fantastic replacing him, Wong's been a really good leadoff hitter for the Brewers, and a leadoff hitter has kind of set up your whole lineup. And he's been very, very good in that leadoff spot. So I think they're missing him, and he's going to be on the IL into the break. And so they need to get him back out there. You know, injuries continue to be an issue for the team. Keston Hira, it's kind of Keston Hira or bust at first base because Vogelbach's on the IL. So injuries have been a factor, but they did have that marvelous 11-day run. And it let them open up some gap in the division. And now we'll see if they can hang on to it going into the break.
Yeah, the Brewers and Cubs were not that long ago tied for first, and this series that kicked off this last week was going to be the spotlight. You know, the Brewers had come off of a long stretch of playing losing teams. They get into this Cubs series and they sweep it, and now the Cubs are in a tailspin, 10 straight losses or whatever, and suddenly the Brewers are ahead of the Cubs by 8 games. I mean, there's a Grand Canyon between them, and now there's
and in the process, one one definitely defines themselves as buyers, and one definitely defines themselves as sellers at the trade deadline.
I know the Cubs came into this season and it seemed like selling was where they were headed, and then they started off good and it looked sustainable. And yeah, I mean, they were going to be a buyer at this end of the July, and now, like you said, it's going to be a totally different different situation for them. So this includes, by the way, a game where the Cubs went up 7-0 in the first inning off of Aaron Ashby making his major league debut, and the Brewers, not only did they win by seven, but they had that 7-run lead compromised in a hurry. They get a What was that? Was that the game with the 10-run inning? No, that's Monday. The 10-run inning. I can't even keep track of this.
They had an 8-run fourth inning in the Cubs game that let them go up 14-7. So they flipped a 7-run deficit into a 7-run lead in a matter of 4 innings. And there was a lot of history made that day, but I think one I remember is first game in the modern era in which both teams led by at least 7 in the first 4 innings.
Oh man, that's just insane. That's just an incredible stat. But in the process, the Cubs have sort of given rise to a new foe here in the NL Central. The Cardinals have struggled a lot since the early part of the year. The Cubs, like we said, are in a tailspin. You know, maybe that's akin to the Brewers' winning streak. Like maybe they find a way to bounce back from that. This is just the low point of their season. But like you said, with the trade deadline around the corner, this is the wrong time for them to be torpedoing. And the Reds, a team that helped, that benefited, they won a few games here against the Cubs, and now they're the primary competition for the Brewers here in the National League Central. They're 6.5 out, which still is a pretty sizable amount. It was 8.5 though, just a couple days ago before the Brewers lost two straight. And the Reds are going to be in Milwaukee to close out the first half of the baseball season before the All-Star break. Four games starting on Thursday, and then on top of it, three games on the other side of it. Now, the Brewers have some starters in the All-Star game, which we'll talk about, but the Reds don't. The Reds are going to be able to line up their best pitchers going into the break and coming out of the break. And I mean, 6.5 games is a lot, but if the Reds are able to stay hot and knock off the Brewers, say they win 5 of 7 or 6 of 7, it's right back into a thick race again here in the National League Central. I'm not sure anyone saw this coming, where the Red Series would be this pivotal moment in time, but this is a big juncture in the season, isn't it, Tom?
It is, and I'm not sure who decided it was a good idea for the same two teams to play 7 straight games, 4 into the break and 3 coming out. But that person should be talked to and advised that that's not good, because as you just said, the Reds are going to be able to line up their pitching not once but twice, with the break, 4-day break in between, letting them do it. Of course, the Brewers can do it as well, but what makes the Reds dangerous? In regards to the Brewers, is they have by far the best offense in the division, by far. And so they don't have trouble scoring runs. So when they get good pitching, and that's been elusive for them this year, they've kind of gone in and out of having good pitching. Sonny Gray hasn't been dominant all the time. Castillo hasn't been dominant all the time. The Brewers have had trouble with some other pitchers in that rotation. So depending on what day you catch them, if their pitching's good, they're dangerous because they can score. You know, they have the two Babes, Babe Winker and Babe Castellanos. Those guys are having great, and I mean great, offensive seasons. And then there's some other dangerous guys in their lineup as well. So the Reds' offensive potential is what makes you take note of them. So I think the Reds' whole season, as far as the division, is in front of them now, with these 7 games in a row against the Brewers leading into the break and coming out of the break. Because after that, the teams don't play much anymore. I think maybe one more series for the year. And so it's sitting right there for them. And if they want to make it a race that goes down to the wire, that's going to be their time to do it. You know, the Brewers have built this big lead, and now the Reds have a chance to challenge it over a 1 week period. So those two series, I don't think we can overstate the importance of the 4 games going into the break and the 3 games coming out of the break. And then as you close in on the trade deadline, just who's going to do what in the division. The Brewers, probably need to try to add some offense. It's been their season-long problem. It wasn't during the 11-game winning streak. Everything kind of came together for them. But then, as we've seen the last 2 games, it can slip away. And when you're on the cusp of maybe some offensive slippage, Jacob deGrom is not the guy you want to be facing. And that's the, you know what? He can put a team into a slump.
Yeah.
And so that's who the Brewers face Tuesday night. We'll see how they do. He has given up some runs in his last couple of starts, which is unusual for him. It ballooned his ERA all the way up to 0.95. It was like 0.5 something. So, I mean, he's not invincible, but the Mets are very good at home. They have a really good home record. They seem to be play way better in Citi Field than they do on the road. So that's a factor to be taken into account also. So we'll just see what DeGrom does. His numbers, Brett Anderson, who's pitching against him, called them video game numbers. And he also noted that when you're constantly your name's coming up in sentences with Bob Gibson, that means you're probably doing pretty good. But he had in his last two starts against Philadelphia and Atlanta, he gave up 5 earned runs in 13 innings. So it was the only two times he's given up more than one run in a start all year.
Yeah, he'll be starting the All-Star game, I imagine, a week from today on Tuesday.
Well, actually, he's scheduled to. They're on a 5-man rotation. The Brewers are on a 6. So on Sunday, JR, both Woodruff is pitching for the Brewers and DeGrom pitching for the Mets. So if they stay on those schedules, if rain doesn't change anything, weather doesn't change anything, neither one of those guys is going to be available to pitch in the All-Star game. And it's one of the reasons why we think Freddie Peralta has a very good chance to be added to the NL All-Star pitching staff.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that for sure. I agree with you. I was going to bring up Freddy Peralta as a possible fill-in, particularly if it's Woodruff. Like you said on Sunday, he is scheduled to pitch again. So particularly if Woodruff is the guy who gets scratched, seems like Peralta would be a natural replacement. The Brewers have been in this position before where they are close to the All-Star break with a considerable lead. It was 5.5 games in 2017. They won a couple games actually right after the All-Star break and then lost that lead in a span of 8 days, 8 games, I should say. So basically, before July's final week, they were then tied for first place in the Central. They stayed afloat for a little while, as I think a lot of people remember the 2017 season. They ended up finishing just a game out of a playoff spot, but by no means is this a safe situation, or should the Brewers feel comfortable? And I got to think, like you alluded to, they've got to get another bat for this offense. And we'll talk about a couple of the guys who are struggling a little bit here in a minute. But I've got to think they're going to pull out some stops here to find a corner infielder, a third baseman in particular. No, I mean, no, nothing wrong with Luis Urias for the most part. He's been slumping a little bit lately. But that still feels a little bit patchwork to me, that that's a guy who's there right now because Travis Shaw is hurt and they don't have anybody else who's obvious over there. First base as well, with Keston Hira's struggles continuing. Like you said, Dan Vogelbach should be back at some point in the second half, I would think. But, coming off a pretty big injury that's destined to keep him out at least 6, maybe 8, maybe more weeks. It's hard to say. I've got to think they're going to add somebody, Tom. Do you see that as well?
Well, offense is where they have vulnerability. You could always just go for more pitching and just try to outpitch people. But if that's your strength and offense is not, then maybe that's what you look to. Lorenzo Cain will be coming back sometime after the break as well. He's going out on injury rehab Thursday. Finally, he's been out a long time with a hamstring injury. So, and then they should get Wong back too. So it would help to get some of their, regular bats back in there that they've been missing all year. But first base, I think they feel they can cover themselves at third with different people and maybe Travis Shaw also returning to help. But I do think, like if Keston Hira is on the verge of another tumble offensively, that's where they're gonna, want to take a look at getting help. The problem is, I mean, do you think the Cubs will trade him Rizzo? I mean, I don't. I don't think that'll happen. But that's, I mean, you have to ask yourself, how good of an offensive player can you get? And at what price? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you to get bats in any type of consistent bat, you're gonna have to give up something, even if it's just for the rest of the year. So it's gonna be very interesting. And just going back to the Cubs for a second, it'll be interesting because they have so many guys at the end of contracts. Exactly what they're able to attract on their trade market if they do decide to sell off. So Sometimes when you have guys that only have 2 more months to go before they hit the market, you don't want to give up a lot for them. So it's going to be very interesting. The trade deadline has also moved up a day this year to July 30th. So, it's going to be very, very interesting to see who does what. And the other thing that we should mention that we probably don't mention enough is right now it looks like first place or bust in the NL Central because the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Giants have such good records. It looks like both wild cards are coming out of the West. So right now it looks like in both the East and the Central, it's we don't have expanded playoffs this year. It's the back to the old format, and so it does look like first place or bust. Last year with the expanded playoffs, the NL Central had four playoff teams. Four of the five teams made the playoffs, but that's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, and I feel wrong nitpicking the offense, given that they just won 11 straight games and did so by pounding runs, left and right.
Right.
But it is notable these two games are a little bit more closer to the norm of what we've seen from the Brewers. They only 2 runs in 2 games. It hasn't been that bad, but this was a struggle the last 2 games. And like you said, DeGrom coming up Tuesday night, it doesn't stand to get better, at least in the immediate short term. And two of the
Yeah,
guys.
well, the offense is where the fragility is. That's where it can come and go. But their pitching's just been good all year. I mean, in these 2 losses coming out of that 11-game winning streak, their starting pitching was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Freddy Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, guys whose great starts got wasted. That has happened to them all year long. So a couple of those guys on offense that you've mentioned here that you wrote about even on Tuesday morning, you can find on jsonline.com, Keston Hira and Christian Yelich. Hira had a streak here where he seemed like he was back to form, but a couple of really rough games in a row. And Christian Yelich is still getting on base. But if you look at his OPS, if you look at his overall power numbers, obviously nowhere near where he was in 2019 and 2018. I think I'm ready to say, Tom, that we're kind of at the point in the season where this is just what you're going to see this year. I don't know if Keston Hira can dig himself out of this situation this year. It seems like he might just need a normal offseason to sort of recalibrate a little bit. I don't know if that means Keston Hira can be in the lineup all year long, or if they just ride hot streaks when they pop up. And the same with Christian Yelich. I mean, he's going to be an asset for you because he does get on base, and he is a factor, and he still gets a ton of respect from pitchers. I mean, nobody wants to pitch to the guy, but he's not going to pop a bunch of home runs. I don't even know if we're going to see double digit home runs from him this year. It's been such a struggle. I think that's just where we are with Christian Yelich. I think this year is just going to be like 2020 to a lesser degree, and then maybe a nice full off season, and those guys can maybe get back on track. But at this point, I don't know. Am I giving up too soon that these guys can rally and sort of rediscover their elite form?
Well, there's still plenty of time for that to happen, but let's see if it does. The Hira thing, it's the swing and miss. You just wonder, if it's just destined to be that way until he figures something out in the longer term. For Yelich, he's just had so many things go wrong since 20. It really all started with breaking his kneecap. In September of 2019, he fouled a pitch off of it. He missed the rest of that season and was in rehab mode all that winter. And then, right when he was ready to ramp it back up last year, COVID shut baseball down. Nothing but weirdness for so many hitters after that in that 60-game shortened season. But he did hit for decent power last year in that 60-game season. There was no question about. That he could hit home run if you made him a bad pitch. But then the back thing this year, he missed over a month with that back thing. And whether that stopped him from finding his power stroke and will for the rest of the season, we're not going to know. We'll be able to know at the end of the season whether that's true. But right now, he's had trouble getting back to his power stroke. And that is one of the things that made him special in 2018, 2019, just his slugging. He led the league in slugging both years with really high slugging percentages. So that's a part of his game that's missing. He is, considering they do still pitch him like Babe Ruth sometimes, just not giving him much to hit. And that's also the part of that equation is the people around him. They just would rather face them than him sometimes. So, he doesn't, he has avoided getting to chase mode where he swings at a lot of bad pitches. and gets himself out. But you know, he's not the same, and the numbers show that. So we'll see. You know, but maybe they all need the All-Star break to just reset a little bit because they've just been playing so many games lately without a break. But we'll see. But offense is, you know, where their constant battle is going to be, and injuries have played a factor. And you know, let's face it, if this wasn't a strong pitching team, they wouldn't be where they are. And it's so unlike just about any other team I've covered with the Brewers. So many years of their offense has been tremendous, and their pitching has just not been that good. But this year, it's exactly the opposite. You know, to have three pitchers, we probably should talk about their all-stars, right? Burns, Woodruff, Hader, and then the possibility of Peralta being added, you know, as we just said. I mean, they've never had three pitchers on the All-Star team, and if Peralta gets added and goes to four, that's going to be incredible off one team.
Yeah, especially considering three guys are in the rotation. I mean, I'm sure it's happened, but three guys from the same rotation on an all-star team is ridiculous. Not to mention your closer. I mean, what do you do? How does anyone beat that team? And like we just mentioned, Freddy Peralta has a good shot because there are a lot of pitchers who wind up getting scratched pitching the last day before the all-star game. That removes them from consideration. They still get to go and have a good time, but somebody takes their place on the active roster. Brandon Woodruff is in that boat. The guy's pitched in an all-star game before, so I don't think it would necessarily be a, you know, he's not a guy you feel bad for because he's been there, done that before. He would still get to go, and like we said, maybe Freddy Peralta takes his spot because Peralta, I mean, no, I was surprised honestly that Corbin Burns made the cut. I didn't know if Peralta would either because I just figured who's going to take three Brewers pitchers or three pitchers from any team. But
Right.
you know, I thought it'd be Woodruff and Hader for sure, and I thought Burns might get left on the cutting room floor because there's so many other teams that they want to get represented and so many other pitchers they want to get in. But Freddy
Right.
Peralta's numbers are arguably better than Corbin Burns's even. I mean, he's just been so good, and it amazes me because when I think of Freddy Peralta, I still think of a little bit of inconsistency in my head, right? Like a guy who's going to walk somebody on four pitches right after striking somebody out on three. But really, I mean, that's mostly just anecdotal, and left. I'm sure you get remnants of that, but for the most part, this guy's been a stud, an absolute stud. A guy I wasn't sure would be in the rotation at the start of the year. I mean, that's the contract they signed him to is an absolute steal at this point. This guy is legitimately one of the best pitchers in the National League.
I mean, look at his pitching line. They don't hit him. You know, he does not give up many hits. I think he's pitched three or four times this year. We only gave up one hit. So they don't hit him. He has very high strikeout ratio. If he doesn't walk people in games, they have very hard time scoring on him because you need some help from him because they just don't hit him. He doesn't give up a lot of hits. He gives up an occasional home run. But that's it. And so I mean, he definitely qualifies as among the best starters in the league. And so if he gets added to the All-Star team, and I do think there's a good chance, it's not going to be like you did him some favor. He's earned it, you know. I think the year Woodruff got on, he replaced his own teammate Hader. I think Hader was scratched for a sore knee or something, and that's how Woodruff got on. And he was deserving too. But yeah, no position players. And the possibility of four pitchers. That tells you a lot about this Brewers team.
I didn't see Buster Posey left a game with an injury. I didn't see how serious it was, but Omar Narvaez, the Brewers catcher, easily in my mind the only position player that should be considered for the All-Star game this year.
Yeah, let's see if he gets added too. I don't think they're going to just add players from just one team. You know what I mean? They're going to try to spread it
Right,
out.
I agree.
So we'll see who ends up going to Denver this weekend. But the Brewers pitching, you know, should be well represented. It's no fluke. I mean, you know, look at, I don't know how many people spend the time looking at all the box scores, but even last night in the Brewers Mets game, when Edwin Diaz, you know, almost cracked in the ninth inning, the Brewers, you know, had the winning, tying and winning runs and played a lot against him before he finally nailed down. That should make people, Brewers fans, appreciate Josh Hader even more. You know, he hasn't been perfect this year, but he's been daggone close to perfect. And, you know, hasn't, you know, he's just n nailed down every save. When you have a guy that you can rely on to always lock down the ninth inning, it changes so much. And so many teams watch games slip away in the last inning. You know, in the first game of that Mets Yankees doubleheader on Sunday, I think the Mets scored like five runs in the last inning to win the game. And so, That was a 7-inning game because it was a doubleheader, but in just the regular 9-inning games, whoever thought of having to get 27 outs was a genius, because sometimes that 27th out just never come.
Yeah, Aroldis Chapman having a rough go. I mean, that's sort of a predecessor for Josh Hader, elite dominant left-handed closer. There was a time when hitting Aroldis Chapman at all was a feat. A seeing eye single was a feat.
Yeah, just getting a hit. Yeah, just getting
Right.
a hit. Well, so sometimes that's the way Hader is. Sometimes just getting a hit off Hader is a major accomplishment.
Yeah, definitely. I'll tell you why I got excited on Monday night because it was 4-1 going into the ninth, and yes, the streak was over. But as many people remember from Easter Sunday in 1987, that 12th game, the Brewers were down 4-1 in the ninth, and then they rallied. They got, of course, Rob Deard hits the game tying 3-run homer. Dale Swaim hits the 2-run homer after that. The first, three guys get on for the Brewers. They score a run. It's 4-2, and I'm thinking this is just like a game removed from the history-making 12th straight win. Sure, it won't be the streak, but it's a total homage to 1987. Of
I
course.
got. Let me tell you a funny story about that. A funny personal story about
Yeah, I want to hear it.
that ninth inning on Easter Sunday. So this was the days before cell phones, right? We didn't have mobile phones. Yeah, we had in the press box at County Stadium just the old desk phones, and that's how we talked to our office and the outside world, right? So when the Brewers were had won 12, were going for the 12th in a row that day, and they were losing by 3 runs in the ninth inning, Rob Deere stepping to the plate, and the phone rings in the press box, and I answer it, and it's my wife calling from our house, and she goes, "Are the Brewers winning today?" And everybody, even she had gotten excited about the possibility of the keeping the winning streak going. I said, "No, they're going to lose. It looks like Trisha, they're down by 3." And just no sooner do I say it, Deere hits the home run that ties it, and I'm pretty sure this is how the conversation went. "I got to run, Click."
Trish.
I heard about that the longest time, about hanging up on my wife in the ninth inning and before, not even telling her that Rob Deere had just hit a 3-run homer, much less the 2-run homer by Dale Swaim to come that won it. So I just t literally left her hanging on the line.
Incredible.
But I sort of needed to watch what was going on and stop talking on the phone.
One of the greatest wins in Brewers history. They go on to win the 13th the next night at Comiskey Park in Chicago before the streak ends. They start the year 20-3, and as many people remember, right after that, 12 consecutive losses. A lot going on that year, and I'd be curious to know more about that year because this one really came under the cover of darkness, this 11-game winning streak, because the Milwaukee Bucks are the talk of the town right now. They're in the NBA Finals, and frequently the Brewers are playing on the same day or at the same time as the Bucks, and it's cool. I'm sure Brewers fans are loving it, but they're also turning their attention to the Milwaukee Bucks game. Like, that's the main attraction right now, and I'm sure they would have taken those free George Webb burgers, don't get me wrong, but that.
Yeah, I mean it was a glorious span there of over a week of Milwaukee sports history, right? With the Bucks winning and pushing forward, and the Brewers, having that winning streak. I mean, life was good. If Aaron Rodgers just would have simultaneously announced he's definitely coming back and all is forgiven,
Yeah.
it would have been sports nirvana in Wisconsin and Milwaukee.
And my understanding is that you're the guy who bestowed the nickname Team Streak, which I don't know if that came up early in the season or after Paul Molitor's hitting streak or Teddy Higuera's scoreless innings, but well, give me a sense of how that happened.
Well, it didn't. I didn't do. I started calling him that in print, and I guess that's how it stuck. But I didn't do it during that 12-game winning streak. It was because, and it was and what became a 13-game winning streak to start the season. Shortly afterwards, they lost 12 in a row, and then Paul Molitor, coming out of the break, and also coming off the what was then called the disabled list, had a 39-game hitting streak. So it just became a team of streaks, and I started calling them Team Streak just because that's who they were. That was incredible, and I'm pretty sure they're still the only team in Major League history that's had a winning streak of at least 12 games and a losing streak of at least 12 games in the same season. Because think about that. Something like that should be impossible. How can you be that good but also be that bad? To have a 12-game winning streak and what became 13, and then a 12-game losing streak. They were, I th I think after that 13-0 start, they got to 21-3, if I remember, and then lost 12 in a row to go to 21-15. And incredibly, JR, and people can look it up because they're going to think I'm lying. At the All-Star break, they had a losing record.
And still came
They were
back and had a pretty good overall season.
20 over, 20 over. If there would have been wild cards back then, they would have got in as a wild card. So, I mean, just the cr there's never been a non-playoff team more interesting to cover than the 1987 Milwaukee Brewers because it was just filled with madness. You know, there's no way a guy should come off the IL and go on a 39 game hitting streak, but Paul Molitor did it.
Yeah, no doubt. Nobody in Major League Baseball has hit 39 since then. I believe we've gotten to 38, but nobody has gotten to 39 in baseball since Molitor's run in 1987. And then, like I said, his streak famously ends in an extra inning 1-0 walk-off win with Molitor on deck. And Teddy Higuera picks up the mantle and has 32 consecutive scoreless innings, which is still a franchise record. I mean, like you said,
Yeah, Rick Manning is still the only player ever to be booed at home for a game-winning hit.
Oh,
He
poor
had
Rick
the
Manning.
game-winning hit with Paul Molitor on deck, and he got booed.
Rick Manning, who came back in the trade that sent Gorman Thomas out of town, so he's already public enemy number one. And yeah, just a weird career for him in Milwaukee. But like you said, can't imagine a more interesting non-playoff regular season than what you saw in 1987. I mean, there's no social media, but obviously you've got what's going on in the newspaper. Was it this big of anticipation? It helped that the Brewers are at home for the end of that 12-game winning streak, I imagine. But I don't know if at 9 games it gets exciting or 10 games. Like at some point, this becomes
Well,
this.
also, what still is the only no-hitter in the club history, Juan Nieves was part of that.
That's
So
right. Yes.
throw the Nieves no-hitter in there. And then Rob Deers, Rob Deer made the cover of Sports Illustrated for hitting that home run on Easter Sunday. I'll never forget it. It was fist in the air as he rounded the bases. There's not many Brewers been on the cover of Sports Illustrated by themselves. So, I mean, what else could have happened? They had, crazy Easter Sunday, the no hitter, which still remains the only no hitter. Then a 12 game losing streak, Molitor's hitting streak. Crazy, crazy, crazy year.
Yeah. Before I let you go, a couple younger guys that I want to ask you about. Aaron Ashby does make that start last Wednesday. It did not go well. He did not get out of the first inning. He gave up 7 runs. It was bad. He of course has been in the bullpen in the minors, and will probably, if he gets back to this team, and I assume he will get back to this team, will be in a relief capacity. Those first game jitters are hopefully out of the way. Brewers, of course, like we said, came back and won that game handily anyway. And Garrett Mitchell, he moves up to Double A now. He is by far the most, I would say, the highest regarded prospect in this organization, certainly on offense, but I think overall, unless Ashby takes the cake for being closer to the big leagues. As we get closer to the trade deadline, I mean, these are names that I think might come up in those trade discussions as well, but I'd be curious to know your thoughts on where these guys stand. I mean, Garrett Mitchell seems like he's making great progress, and like I said, I still think Ashby will be back this season.
Yeah, don't look for either of those two guys to be traded. Garrett Mitchell, what he's doing is unbelievable because he gets drafted in 2020 out of UCLA, and then they don't have a minor league season, so he just sits around all year. I mean, he did some things, but no, get his professional debut just doesn't happen. Then he shows up in spring training in the Brewers camp. Pretty advanced for them to even invite him. Maybe that was part of his signing deal out of the draft, but he comes and he's fantastic. Just fantastic. Just bats well, way over 300. Fantastic. Looks like he's been in the major leagues for years, much less not even having made his pro debut. So then they're careful with him. They send him to the Timber Rattlers. A couple of games in, he hurts his leg and misses almost a month. Then he comes back and he's just on fire like he's never been away again. And just plays so the last game he played there Sunday against Boyd, 2 homers and 6 RBIs and 4 hits. So I guess they said that's a very good game to advance him to the next level. And he was player of the week in his league. So they move him up to Biloxi, and it also allows him to move up another guy who's having a tremendous year, Joe Gray Jr. He's another former very high draft pick, I think a second rounder, who had had injuries his first couple of years. So they moved him up from Carolina to Wisconsin to replace Mitchell. So, I mean, Garrett Mitchell just seems invincible and impervious to inaction. First not having a year last year, then being hurt throughout much of April this year. So It's definitely, and he's a center fielder, with Lorenzo Cain and Jackie Bradley Jr., both in their 30s, so that's something to keep an eye on. And then Ashby, he had those for that first game jitters, but he's very talented. He's got a nasty, funky delivery left-hander. I think we're going to see him be in Milwaukee for a long time. And so we'll see him again probably more sooner than later. That's too bad the way that first inning went for him. But I loved his attitude afterwards. He goes, I it didn't go well, but I still had fun. I don't really think he was having fun, but I do think, he meant just getting to finally be in the big leagues. So, something like that becomes just a footnote when you actually win the game and don't lose it. He would have always been remembered as the guy who stunk so bad in the first inning that they got killed, but instead they came back and won, so he became sort of a footnote, And so we'll see him back. I wonder if we'll see Ethan Small at some point too. He's been elevated, their number one draft pick from 2019. He's been elevated to Nashville. He's one step away now. He's an advanced starting pitcher, a lefty. So he's a guy that I think we could definitely see in the big leagues this year. So they're in really good stead right now on the pitching front. It's been a long, long time since they felt this good about their pitching at the top two levels.
Yeah, better to have a catastrophic first start and be back later than say Chris Sines, who famously had six shutout innings and never pitched again for the Brewers. He got demoted, got hurt. Aaron Ashby, unless knock on wood, unless he gets hurt, will certainly be back and contributing either probably this year and definitely the years after that. Ethan Small also great time to be a Brewers pitching prospect. It's clearly they got something clicking. Any last thoughts before I let you go, Tom? I feel a little bad that we haven't said the names Jace Peterson or Willy Adames on this podcast talking about the Brewers' 11 game winning streak. But there's just so much to discuss, I guess.
Well, the winning started the day Willy Adames showed up on May 22nd in Cincinnati, by the way. They've won. They're way over 500 since then, and that's not a coincidence. Has he done it all by himself? Of course not. But has he been? He has a real flair for the dramatic, especially the dramatic home runs. He's not a guy that homers in an 11-1 victory or a 10-2 loss. He homers in the eighth inning with a tie score. You know what I mean? Or the ninth inning. That's when he homers. And he had a grand slam to cap one of those huge innings against the Cubs. So he has a flair for the dramatic. And then Jace Peterson, especially with Wong being out so much, has really just exceeded expectations. He was one of the stars of the 11 game winning streak, let's put it that way. He when you look at the stars of the winning streak, Jace Peterson was one of them. And so and he just has really good professional at bats, so they like him a lot. And they're going to keep playing him as much as they can.
He is Tom Haudricourt, Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He's actually in New York as we speak. He'll be there to cover the Brewers against the Mets, game two against Jacob deGrom on Tuesday night, then Wednesday, cap the series. And then those four big games against Cincinnati at American Family Field to close out the first half before the All-Star break. Big games coming up against Cincinnati Reds. Tom will be there to write about it. Again, jsonline.com. Thanks for joining us, Tom. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, JR.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again next week on the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. Farewell.